This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our special guest is Reginald White. Reggie, as his friends call him, is a bivocational pastor, with his other job being an engineering manager at Northrop Grumman. He has a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Cornell University and a Master of Divinity degree from Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Originally from Pittsburgh, Reggie and his wife of over 20 years, Camelia, moved to Orlando in 2004 to help plant and nurture Church of the Great Commission. Over the last 2 years, Reggie has led Church of the Great Commission in a transition toward an Acts 2:42 model of being the church. The vision is to be a network of house churches that span Central Florida and beyond. Reggie, welcome to the studio today. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Well, terrific. Bivocational.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Well, where to start? When I was in undergrad, I was studying mechanical engineering. Actually started off in chemical engineering, and that wasn't for me, so I ended up in mechanical engineering. I ended up with an internship at Westinghouse Electric Company in Pittsburgh, or Westinghouse Electric Corporation at that time, Bettis Laboratory in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania, actually. And it was a great internship right after my freshman year in college. And then after my sophomore year, I went back to that same internship. And that summer, I began to receive sermons, which, if you've never received a sermon, that doesn't make sense. So I would be sitting in a service. The preacher would say, today we're going to preach from Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 8. He would read the verses, and then I would know what I would say if I were to preach that sermon on that text. I'd be like, oh, I would say this. I would say this. I'd make this point. And then when the preacher wouldn't make those points that I would make, I'm like, oh, he missed an opportunity. But that kept happening week after week. And I realized, oh, God is calling me to preach. Mm. And I said, yeah, no, I'm not. Not interested in that. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm an engineering student. I'm going to be an engineer. I have this great internship. I loved my job. I'd wake up in the morning and could not wait to get to work. Mm. I had opportunity to design things, and it was just wonderful. And so once it was clear to me that God was calling me, and I said, no, that's not what I want to do. It probably was a Wednesday or a Thursday when I heard God calling me. The next day I went into work, probably Thursday morning, I went into work and had no joy.
Hmm.
Not an ounce of joy about being at work. I didn't want to be at work. It was drudgery. It was horrible. And I was like, God, this is so not fair. This is not fair. Why do you get to do this? And so the next day, Friday, I woke up, and again, it was more of the same. It was just, I didn't want to go to work, nothing. You know, people talk about when their heart is broken and all the colors lose, they become pale, everything goes gray. Right. That's what it was like for me at work, which was shocking because I did enjoy it so much. That weekend, so Thursday or Friday, I didn't have any joy at work. That Sunday, we had a guest minister who came from Washington, D.C., David Perrin. Hmm. He was a protege of our pastor. Anyway, he came and preached a sermon. And basically, the gist of the sermon was, if you have a gift, you must use it. And at the end of the sermon, I was born and raised Baptist. And so at the end of our services, always, you'd get a call to discipleship, you know, if you don't know the Lord, if you want to accept the free gift of salvation,
right.
Then come forward and they would, you know, pray with you and walk you through the process. Instead of a call to discipleship, he gave a call to ministry. which was the first time I'd ever been in a service where that happened. He's like, there's someone here. You're here, and God has called you to ministry. I was thinking, are you kidding me, Lord? You sent this man from Washington, D.C. to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to make this call for me. Okay, fine.
Did you raise your hand, say it's me?
I went forward. Absolutely, I went forward and accepted my call to ministry that day. So my days of running like Jonah lasted for 2 days. And the question was, the question for me was, so what do I do with this? I mean, okay, so I'm called to preach. I'm going to be a preacher, but I'm in engineering. Like, I still have 2 more years to finish my degree. What am I supposed to do with this? And I really didn't know what that would look like. I just figured, okay, well, I mean, I'm already at Cornell, and I'm in the midst of getting this degree. I'm going to finish that. I don't know what it will look like. Will I ever do engineering? So I finished my degree, graduated, and began working full-time at Westinghouse, served as a youth minister, then a youth pastor, and then an assistant pastor. And all the while, I was thinking, at some point, I'm going to become a full-time pastor. I'm not going to be in the engineering field anymore. And I had a friend at Bettis Laboratory, Ken Burney, who said to me, you know you're looking for a full-time ministry position, but I really believe your full-time ministry position is right here. Like, you minister to me. You minister to people in this in this workplace. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really happy with that answer. I was like, oh, whatever. And so eventually, I went to seminary. While I was working full-time, I went to seminary nearly full-time as well. Got my Master of Divinity. And then I was like, okay, Lord, I've got my degree, got my Master's of Divinity. It is time for me to become a pastor. Like, I'm sure you want me to become a full-time pastor and to get paid for what my passion, where my passion is. And I enjoyed engineering, but it was never my passion like preaching was. And sure enough, I had opportunities to go and be a guest preacher and to, you know, to candidate for a number of churches, and none of those worked out. And eventually I came to Florida to help start the church, and I was thinking, this is it, finally. When you do a church plant, there's not a lot of money, and there's not a lot of budget for salaries. Right. And so for the first year and a half, my wife and I, and at that time our one son, we lived off of our savings. I didn't have an engineering job. I wasn't really getting paid by the church, so we just kind of dwindled through our savings. And like I said, after a year and a half or so, I did get a part-time kind of position as a technical writer at a company here in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And it was a blessing. It was an opportunity to kind of get some traction and stop using up all of our savings, which we were pretty much, we got all the way through. Yeah.
One of the things that is going to interest people who are listening is that the whole purpose of this series is to blend business and the Bible. Mm-hmm. And you're sort of a person walking around that has done that academically.
Sure.
And that as you move from a work situation, obviously some of your biblical training bleeds into that and helps that career develop.
Sure.
And as you work to develop churches, some of the things that are business principles obviously bleed into that. So you're kind of the hybrid of putting those two areas together in a way that all the listeners are trying to do. So let's move now, because they're listening in addition to saying, okay, I'm a leader in this organization. What do I do in terms of putting business and Bible together? First of all, tell us a little bit about Northrop Grumman and your position there.
Mm-hmm. Northrop Grumman is a defense contractor in the United States. It's one of the largest ones. And they produce aircraft and aircraft systems and satellite systems and networks and all those kind of things for the Army and the Air Force. And our particular location works on satellite ground stations, as well as the software that runs those, and networks that connect training simulation systems together.
So when you describe your job, the title is Integrated Logistics support functional manager.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, Reggie?
Sure. Okay, so integrated logistics support. So logistics is basically maintaining and operating the infrastructure that allows everything else to work. So whether it be how do we move equipment from point A to point B, that's logistics. How do we train people to use this equipment that we've provided? That's logistics. How do we write manuals and whatnot that inform people of how to maintain? That's all logistics. So logistics is not producing the product itself, but it's all of the surrounding infrastructure that allows the product to get used well by the end user.
Okay, and it's across different projects then that the organization has.
Absolutely.
A very complex organization structure.
Sure, absolutely.
Communication difficulty.
Yeah.
All of those challenges mm-hmm. are certainly there. When you start to think about your team, and you have a team, how
yes.
many people are on your team?
Now there are about 18 people on my team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And those people come from different backgrounds and
absolutely.
And have different kinds of gifts that they are.
Exactly. So we have people who are logisticians, and then we have people who are technical writers. We have drafters. We have configuration management analysts. So we have a whole range of people, engineering planning analysts, a whole range of different skill sets.
Part of your background has to do with industrial engineering,
mm-hmm.
and you seem to have gravitated toward people.
Yes.
And people issues at Northrop and other places.
Sure.
As opposed to just the technical writing and the other things that take. What are some of the people challenges that you have as a manager at Northrop?
Sure. So we're a matrix organization. So the program managers are responsible for executing programs, and functional managers like myself are responsible for managing teams of people, and we effectively farm those people out, if you will. We contract them out to program managers to fulfill their tasks. Well, one of the things that can happen is program managers are very good at making sure that their program gets done, and whether or not the work is fulfilling to the employee or not is not always the first concern of that program manager. That's really my concern as a functional manager, to make sure people have good, meaningful work, that they can actually find joy in work. And so the challenge there is to make sure that all the tasks need to get done. Some of the tasks are exciting. Some of the tasks are mundane. They all need to get done. And at the same time, while all the tasks are getting done, make sure that everybody, or try to make sure that everybody, is actually enjoying work.
Okay.
And what's coming in the morning.
Okay. What do you mean by meaningful work?
So so for everyone, it's different. The things that they find to be satisfying, where you feel like you're making a difference, where you feel like, I know that I contributed to the larger goal, and I can see that my work helped us to reach it. As opposed to if you feel like all I do is move chairs around, right? And so our company is not about moving chairs around, but you paid me for 8 hours to move chairs around. That might not feel like meaningful work.
Right.
If you work in a place where moving chairs around is the thing, then maybe it is meaningful work. But in our business, moving chairs is not meaningful work. And sometimes we have to do things like moving chairs or things that are just extremely repetitive. If we're doing inventory, just reading off, the long list of items that are supposed to be in the inventory and checking them twice. If that's all you do all day, that can become... it can start to feel meaningless. Like, I know I'm doing this, and sure, maybe somebody cares, but I don't really feel like anyone cares.
We have a feature in each of our podcasts called Sunday to Monday. And it has to do with what you might hear Sunday at church. In your case, maybe it's what you might say Sunday at church
sure.
to the congregants. And how you could use that issue that you hear in your work life.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that part of meaningful work also has to do with, are you using the gifting
mm-hmm.
that you have?
Right.
And we might hear on a Sunday the issues of 1 Corinthians 12 in terms of gifting.
Sure.
Tell us about gifting, the different gifts that people have that you see around you and how you try to employ them. In other words, how do we take this biblical conversation and actually apply it in a workplace setting?
Yeah.
What are those gifts, and how do you try to manage those?
Sure. So one of the things that it's interesting that you asked that question. I think sometimes when we think about gifting, we just think about the things that are literally listed in Scripture as if that's an exhaustive list of the gifts. But God gifts people in all kinds of ways. There are some people who are gifted in really being detail-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good at picking up details. And so if someone is a technical writer and they're an editor, that gifting is really important, to be detail-oriented. There are some people who are very outgoing and do a really good job of working a room. And we have some people who have to provide training. And so those people, that kind of gifting can really suit that task. And so as you indicated, connecting it with meaningful work. If I feel like, man, the work that I'm doing actually resonates with who I am, then it becomes meaningful, or it feels more meaningful.
And you talked about, the gifts that you talked about were non-biblical gifts, at least not mentioned in the Bible
Sure.
in the same way, and detail being one of those. Give us an example or two of the gifts in the Bible that are mentioned.
Sure. Well, certainly the gift of administration is clearly mentioned in Scripture. And I have people that are part of my team who are amazing administrators, amazing at, and by administration, I don't simply mean being able to file papers. What I mean is being able to look at all of the various tasks that need to be done and coordinating them and helping the team understand these are the 17 things that have to get done in this kind of order, and managing us in that kind of direction. So that's one that comes to mind.
Right. So when you start to think about a work setting, that work setting has the sort of the technical skill associated with it, but it also has gifts that focus on how you employ those technical skills.
Sure.
And how you move it forward. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. And one of the things that you shared with me in preparation for this podcast had to do with yellow and green and your reporting.
Sure.
Give us a scenario about that.
Sure. So I'm responsible for producing a metric report. And metric reports for us are color-coded. If your metric or your measurement of a particular quality is green, that's good. If it's yellow, that's uh-oh. And if it's red, that's bad. Delivering documentation is one of the metrics I'm responsible for reporting on, but I'm also responsible for that particular, not just reporting on it, but actually executing the delivering of documents, making deliverable documentation available to the customer. And so whenever we have a contract lays out, you know, there are these 250 documents that are due over this period of time, and they're due, some are due 7 days after this has happened or 3 days after this has happened. And so there's a challenge to develop a schedule that's accurate and makes sure that you deliver all your documents on time. Long story short, we had a document that was due, and the due date was such that it would be due on a Sunday. And we're not open on Sunday. And so whenever a document is due on the weekend, it must be delivered the working day before that weekend. And so really was due on Friday. But when I looked at my list before the document was due, I saw that the date was not yet. It wasn't for a few days. And so I went home on Friday. And when I came in on Monday and realized I had a late document, went to the program manager and told him, hey, you know, I've made this error. This is late. And the way we treat late documentation is if it's late, if you have one late document where you go from a green metric to yellow, that's really a big deal. And because then you have to write a return to green plan, and there's oversight, and there's, you know, it's a big deal. And it's, no one wants to have a yellow metric. And so I told my manager, the program manager, that, and he was like, okay. And a few people were saying to me, you know, it was due on a Sunday. Just just turn it on a Monday, which I did turn it in when I got in on Monday, but you don't need to report that. Do not report that. Really, don't report it. And I heard what they were saying, and I said, yeah, no, it's late. We have to report it as late. But this is the first time this has ever happened to you. Really, it's not that big of a deal. So anyway, so I reported it as late and went to the meeting to make the presentation, and it didn't turn out to be a terrible. Upper level management was not particularly angry. There were very minor consequences, so right. That was good. But most significantly, a few days later, we were sitting in a meeting. I was sitting in a meeting with that same program manager, and I can't remember exactly what the context was, but we're sitting around the table, and someone suggested to him that he say something to someone else that wasn't quite true, and he smiled. And he looked at me and says, Reggie won't let me. And I don't know if anyone else in the room got it, but I was like, wow, that's awesome. I'm glad that, you know, my standing up for integrity, even in that small way, made a difference to him.
It is awesome. Yeah. It is awesome. And it has to do with a leader's reputation in an organization and the relationship to develop after that. And you submitted for conversation a pearl of wisdom, which is that which you would like to leave someone as they finish listening here and what to do. And your pearl was, integrity comes with a cost, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And this I'd like to tie in with the scenario that you just managed. Explain that to us a little bit. Why is it worth it? And what is the cost?
Well, you know, integrity often will cause you to own up to something that you might not otherwise want to own up to. Because none of us are perfect, integrity requires us to own up to our imperfections. And when we don't own up to them, maybe our reputation, you know, in our minds we're thinking, oh, if I don't own up to this, if I never mention it, no one will ever know. That might be true, no one will ever know. But you'll know.
You will know.
And the Lord knows.
Yes.
And why do you want to carry that? So you don't really want to carry that burden. But more than that, the example that leaves for others to say, there are things more important than my reputation, you know, in terms of whether you think I'm a great worker or a great leader. If I make a mistake and own up to that, I'm hopeful that that will encourage someone else to do the same. And to,
yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, just the whole leaving a legacy, if you will, that I'm leaving a mark on this organization. Whether we had 15 straight weeks with no yellow metrics or not, at the end of the day, no one's going to remember that. But hopefully, that program manager will remember, man, when Reggie was given the opportunity just to say, yeah, I'm not going to report that, he explicitly did.
And one of the things that it does as well is to help build the culture of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And your courage in going ahead and saying, no, let's be truthful here, obviously impacted somebody.
Right.
And if you can build that operation, that organization, with a culture that respects integrity, how much better is that for everyone?
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful thing. I hate to cut you off here, Reggie, but time is up. And I want to thank you for being here. Listeners can find Reggie with the email address pastor@commission.org. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. See you next Wednesday. In the meantime, continue on with your chase because it's worth it. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.